honestly, when Insecure came out, I had been waiting for it for 2 years.
Okay.
When the show came out, I was so excited to watch it. And then when the credits rolled, I was like, there's no room for me anymore. Like, she is the awkward Black girl, and there is no room for me in Hollywood now. And it is over for me. But I had to, like, realize, okay, those are her stories. Right. And even watching her stuff, there's stuff that if it was my show, I would have done it differently. And so that means that there are different shows in me, even though I am awkward and Black. There mm-hmm. are other things to my character and to my thought process and to the things I'm interested in. So if I get more in tune with what I like and not what I think I can sell to the industry, then, you know, good will come of it, basically.
Welcome to Josiah's Voice. This podcast connects you with both new storytellers and seasoned pros in Black cinema. Plus, I share my own creative journey along the way. Here's to elevating the culture. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode. I'm really hyped to talk to this guest. I met her briefly with a previous guest, Jasmine Johnson of Black Filmmaker. And shortly after that, I got to meet her homegirl, her partner in crime or producer friend extraordinaire, Simone Williams. And I was like, yo, I need to talk to her about producing. She's a fellow screenwriter, so we're going to talk about screenwriting. And just all types of other really, really awesome stuff. I'm so glad that she agreed to talk to me. And that's my little intro. We're just going to jump right on in. I hope you guys help me welcome Simone Williams. Simone, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited for you to be able to share your story and your experiences for our other aspiring creators, Black creators, creators of color. So for those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Some of your favorite TV shows, favorite films, where you grew up?
Okay. I just did an application where I had to do all this, so it's fresh, you know?
What app was that for at the time? I saw it on the stories.
It was the Writers Guild Association.
Congrats for applying. That's great.
It was the Writer Support Training Program. So they'll nice. Train you on how to be like a writer's PA, writer's assistant, and then they'll place you on a show. So... hopefully.
Awesome. Yes. Congratulations on that app. That's great. Wishing you the best, okay?
Thanks.
You're welcome. So
to tell you about myself. I'm from Clarkston, Michigan. Very small town that like nobody knows unless you're from Michigan and like played our basketball team. And I've kind of loved TV and story forever. I was like really, really shy when I was younger, and I would just like watch TV and be like, okay, this character is brave in this way. Okay, this character is kind of like me here, and like seeing myself in other characters and how they maneuver, and like, okay, she can be a little brave, so maybe I can be a little brave. And like, I like built my personality up that way. And then by like age 6, I was writing plays for like every major holiday. So I'd write a Mother's Day play. I'd write a Father's Day play.
Cool.
I'd write a Christmas play. And then I'd have all my siblings, because there's 6 of us, down in the basement, and I'd be running rehearsals and like getting a wild right, tweaking the performances. And then we'd perform it. It'd be great. We have some on recording that I'm really excited to see. So I did that. By 15, that's when I really started like researching how to format a proper script mm-hmm. and flesh out characters and, you know, different things like that. Went to college at Florida A&M, started in business. Immediately switched to journalism so I could write stories and be closer to a camera, even though it was a news camera.
Mm-hmm.
Joined FAMU Focus Film Club. Jazz became president. She said, just apply, just be the vice, be my vice. And I said, okay.
Love it.
Mm-hmm, did that. And I had forgotten about it till I did the application yesterday, but while I was doing that, I made a curriculum for screenwriters, and I like taught the kids how the story stuff that I learned from like a one-day program with Kelsey Scott and everything I had learned online. Mm-hmm. So I put that together. I taught people screenwriting. I ran a writer's room. We came up with this really interesting like mystery thriller whodunit kind of thing and wrote like 18 pages of scripts. So like that was really cool. I was like really proud of myself. I remembered that I did that. And later on, I hadn't even been in a real writer's room when I did that. So when I did get to fly out to LA as part of the Lee Daniels Creative Workshop, he had one in 2019, and I don't know if he's had one since, but they flew me out and I got to sit in the Empire writer's room, and I'm like, okay, it's holding up. Like yeah, what I yeah. did, it's holding up. So that was really exciting. The following year I graduated. I'm giving you the full life story. The following year I graduated from FAMU, May 2020.
Nice.
July of that year, Jasmine Johnson, her short film Sounds of War got picked up by Beats by Dre. So she asked me to help her like with production and basically do a lot of the paperwork, which I didn't know how to do, but I figured it out. So I'm making schedules, I'm making budgets, I'm making
right
not really a shot list, but like it was something for post to say like, this is the shots we want, these are the sounds we want, this is like the vibe. That they were like, oh, we're impressed, like this is good, this is good industry quality. So another yes. moment like I don't know what I'm doing, but then I get in the room and they're like, you're doing it. So that was cool. Yeah. Then I moved to Atlanta because I felt like I didn't have enough money or resume yet to move to LA. Moved to Atlanta, worked 2 reality show jobs. It was cool. I loved the city. I liked the shows. I went through a lot.
Gotcha.
And then I moved to LA January 2021. I got a COVID PA job on a Shrink Next Door. Started talking to their camera team. Got into the Warner Media Access to Action program.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
No, it's a great program. They place you on shows, so you're getting consistent work. Wonderful. They give you your union days. And then at the end of mine, I was aware that in the past they had paid for some people's dues. So I asked if they could pay for mine and they said, okay. So
you better get that money.
I might as well ask.
Yes.
I was so nervous writing that letter. I said, I've heard there's a precedent, you know, and they paid my dues. So
wow.
I'm in the camera union.
Congratulations.
Still writing, trying to like use the bump in pay to be able to survive moments of no work.
Right.
Those moments are when I write. So I finished my pilot, got it copywritten for it at the Metaphor Club. Did you go to the Metaphor Club when you were here?
I didn't get to. No, I think you and Jazz had told me about it, some other mutuals. I didn't get to. Next time I'm out there.
Got you. Yeah, definitely. Because they have these meta reads kind of once a month where people can have the first 10 pages of their script read. So that was exciting. The things that I thought were funny, they were laughing back to back. So it felt.
Thank God.
Right. Dazelle Lathan, he is incredible, but he is hard to impress. And so okay. My script, and he was like, it's really, really good. And I was like, did you laugh? He said, I knew it was a comedy. I said, oh, that's not good. I was overread and people were laughing. I was like, okay, cool. So it is funny. It's just sometimes easier to laugh when it's being said than when you're reading it.
Right. Well said. Okay. Are you a journaler? Like a personal journaler?
I just became one maybe in the past year. Because LA has been a lot as well.
I'm sure. So, like,
putting it all down on paper has been really helpful. And yeah. sometimes I'll read it back and be like, oh, that was good. Like, you know, because the writer in you is always going to put like flowery like wording into it. And
I know. Yeah.
You kind of can't turn it off. So like going back and reading and be like, oh, this is devastatingly beautiful.
I thought I was the only one who said I use devastating myself sometimes. And I'm like, is that a little extra? But I don't know. It just speaks to what I'm going through right now. That's the word.
It's definitely extra. But as a writer, it's the right word for what it feels like.
Yes. Yes. And I asked that because when you were talking about your application and also instances where you were either in a writer's room or in another situation where you weren't sure, like, is what I'm doing up to scratch or whatever, it reminded me of the power of journaling, because you relive past stuff. And sometimes, I know you can speak to this, you get caught up in the vortex just of life and you forget what you've accomplished. And so it's important. Would you agree that it's important to find your own way, be it journaling or something, to reflect on your accomplishments?
Definitely, definitely important. And also important to realize when you're successful in the moment, like even sending the application, like that was a good moment for me. Like you said you wanted to do it and you did it. There are a lot of people who want to do it and they don't, or they forget, or they
distracted. Right.
Just sending it is its own accomplishment. Putting yourself out there as a shy person. I'm still shy in my heart. And so like putting myself out there is its own accomplishment. And then it also helps that I kind of, last show I worked on was Black Lady Sketch Show in December.
Awesome.
And I haven't been crewed on a show since. I've day played here and there and I've done projects here and there, but I haven't been consistent. So when I came back to the last show I day played on was History of the World.
Okay.
And I did that and people from Black Lady Sketch Show were like, hi, what have you been up to? And I'm like, nothing. But then I started listening and I'm like, no, it's kind of something.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
Being able to talk to people who are like interested in what you're doing also makes you kind of interested in what you're doing or realize how much you've done.
Can you briefly define, for those who don't know, what is being crewed and what is, I believe you said it, being staffed? I think I heard you say that. Then what's in game for you?
Okay. So being crewed, which I hope I use that word right, is when, you know, before the show starts, they say, I want you to work on the show. You say yes, you fill out your deal memo and you're on the show, you know, till the end. Day playing, which is what I've been doing lately, is that some people will have to go take other gigs or they'll have to go home for something and I'll step in and fill in, which is nerve-wracking because you don't know their processes, but you're expected to fly in like seamlessly. And I just got into the union. I just learned all the stuff. But I'm getting more and more comfortable with it. And it's also another place that I'm realizing, okay, I know what I'm doing. Like if there's a crisis with the monitors and stuff, I know what hookups to do and I understand how the data flows. And it's
right. Yes. Day playing. That's what it was. Thank you. Not staff. Day playing. That's great.
Because I'm not staffed. I would love to be, but
not yet. Not yet. Cool. And then, yeah. So what's end game for you in the filmmaking industry? Is it one specific thing or multiple things maybe?
So I came to LA to be a writer. Ended up in camera. Yes.
My people.
And I knew, that's how I knew immediately. I was like, he's either a Sagittarius or a writer. But I came here to be a writer, director of my own stuff. I thought in order to be a good director, I needed to know camera, which is kind of true, but not to the extent that I thought it was.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's why I ended up in camera. Now I love camera. So it's like, and there's not a lot of Black women in camera. There's literally
right.
Chris Waregi made a group called 600 Black Women, the Camera Cookout. And yeah, nice. I love it.
Love that.
It's because there's less than 1% of the union is Black women. There's
For real?
There's like less than 80 of us in a union of thousands.
Okay.
So I'm like, I know my friends who like to write. I know my friends who like to act, who like to produce, but not a lot of people in camera. And that's something I can bring to my friends' projects.
100%.
That's a way I can help their visions come to life. So I'm actually DPing my friend Tierra Bryan's short film coming up. So another thing that I'm probably in over my head, but it's going to be great. Hers is called Perspective.
That's it. Yep.
It's like a he said, she said.
That, yeah.
Shit.
Wow. So,
thing. There's two parts. I have to like make them visually different than each other, like to progress the story. And because there's a lot of scenes that are the same, but they need to feel different because new information is coming up. And it's just, I'm excited. I do know they're still always looking for more fun.
Yes, because making movies is not cheap, ladies and gentlemen.
At all. And we're applying for grants. Well, they're applying for grants and, you know, trying to find ways to cut costs. And I'm trying to do my part by not.
Yeah.
I want anamorphics. And so
snap.
It's like every shot I see in my head is anamorphics. So hoping we get this Panavision grant.
Can you briefly define anamorphics and why is that? Like, why are you jonesing for that?
Mm-hmm. So the two main types of lenses are circular spherical lenses and anamorphics. The circular spherical ones have like circular glass, the bokeh, which are like when lights are blurred in the background.
Yeah.
Those will be circular. And then there's not a lot of like distortion in the zoom. It'll feel kind of like you're walking forward. With anamorphics, they're kind of like oval, like a vertical oval. They have a wider ratio.
The
ratio is like wider, like widescreen. It feels more epic. The bokeh, the lights in the back are oval. And then when they zoom, to me, there's like distortion.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels a lot more epic. And then also you get really good lens flares. And so I have a shot in mind with the headlights of a car that I really want like the lens flares that are in like the Transformer movies.
And yeah.
So for that, I would need an anamorphic.
Nice. Okay. And guys, bear with me because I'm in the present right now.
This is a time capsule.
So I'm going to have Simone's information, but also in the show notes, you'll find Tierra's information as well, because her film's going to be well on its way by the time this drops. So you're going to want to follow both these young women like immediately. So, but I just want to make that little, distinction for you just with how production's going and everything. So thank you for breaking that down with the lenses. Something here you kind of touched on. Is there anything else you'd want to say about when you knew you wanted to make films? You watched a lot of stuff growing up. Was there a moment by any chance or a particular show or film where you were like, this is where I'm going. This is going to be me in the future when I grow up.
It was A Different World. Very closely followed by Living Single.
Wow. Jeez. Yeah.
A Different World. Because one, that's when I realized like I'm big on story. I'm big on character. I'm really interested in people in general, any kind of person. I'm just interested. And so I feel like TV gives you enough time to see a character grow and learn and think and apply. And it feels like the human experience more than a movie does. Because a movie has to, you know, button up the story. There has to be like really quick growth and it sometimes feels unnatural. So unless it's like an indie film, those are usually like slice of life. And those are a little more delicate with the character growth. But that's when I realized I wanted to write TV. I wanted to write Black characters and comedy that also tackles big issues and the drama of it. It was just so good. It was so good.
Yes. I can't know it. That's cool. Correct me if I'm wrong. I tried to do a little research. Okay. Last I checked, anyway, what is a showrunner? And if it's your dream job still, why is that?
Yes, showrunner is still my dream job. I'll definitely step in and DP other people's projects. That's probably a non-traditional like idea for my career, but I want to showrun my own projects and then DP other people's projects. And a showrunner is someone who is basically in charge of the story from top to bottom. So they're involved in a lot of the production meetings. First of all, they run the writer's room. They decide, like, this is the story that we're telling. How are we going to get to these different story beats? And then, you know, delegating based off people's strengths. I think they also hire the people that come into the room or are a big part of the hiring process for the people that come into the room. On set as well, I know writers do come on set, but I think the showrunner also is on set, making sure the story is being told.
Nice. Do you have a favorite memory from when you have been in the writer's room? Like some of the stories you referenced earlier, or the energy or anything that really stood out?
That little student writer's room that I did was so exciting because I made a point before I even started that I'm just going to facilitate whatever story comes out of the group, and I'm not going to try to say, I think this is the best idea, so this is the one we're going with. We had a vote, and my only job was to make sure we're not doing cliches. If a cliche comes up, say like, hey, we've seen that in this, this, and this, so let's think of something else. Let's push ourselves a little further, making sure that the story remained cohesive and making sure that the writers felt empowered to give their ideas, even after saying like, maybe not this one, but keep going. And what I found was that everybody, whether they had written before or whether they had just stepped into the room and just wanted to know how to write, brought something that I wouldn't have thought of. Like, everybody brought their own perspective, and it was really, really exciting. What I like about the writer's room is sometimes you're like playing God.
Yeah.
And like
100%.
These characters, and it's like you're putting them in the toughest situations possible. And there's a little bit of like, but you know, they're going to come out of it and they're going to come out of it better. So seeing them all be a part of that process and be confident in that process and being able to bring that to them, and then later find out that what I taught them could still hold up.
That's awesome. Do you have any favorite showrunners currently?
Prentice Penny, probably. I keep trying to like talk to him. I've DM'd him for sure. I've left comments in his lives because he does have times where he talks to people and answers questions.
Yeah.
So I'll like ask him a little. He hasn't seen me yet, but he'll know me.
Soon. Because I'm sure you love his breakdown of the writer's room, right? Where he uses like color theory. He bounces between his color theory example and the Avengers example. Can you speak to that at all? Like, what does that resonate with you? And if so, why? And why Prentice Penny for you?
The Avengers one for sure, because even before, because I think, how long was Insecure out? I don't think I had heard him talk about his process for the writer's room before I ran the writer's room at FAMU.
Okay.
But when I heard him say it, I'm like, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. Like, I'm everybody's strengths. I'm more of a vessel for the story than like the final say-so on what's right and what's wrong. And you want to be in service to the creator of the show. That's what I really liked, is taking it as like a position of service.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think that's something that's just big for me in general in my life, is like just even like talking about being a DP, it's because I want to be in service to my friends who don't have that. And so I thought that was special. So I think he's a great showrunner.
Yeah, me too. I haven't had the opportunity yet to be in a writer's room. So people like him or yourself who have run them, who have taught people, I like webinars. I soak it in. It's one of my favorite aspects of doing this show, because it's like I'm learning as well, or relearning, tagging up those bases. And when he started using his examples of like color, or in this case, the Avengers, where for those of you listening who don't know, he might say like, you know, there's one Hulk on the Avengers. You don't want, how many members of the Avengers proper are there, like 6 or 7? You don't want 6 or 7 Hulks. You do want characters like, say, Black Widow and Hawkeye to run stealth missions. You do want, you know, a billionaire playboy with all the resources, because Cap probably doesn't have really that much money, you know, or what. Everyone's got a gift. Everyone, yeah.
Even a little Ant-Man.
Even Ant-Man, like, you know, the Quantumania, you know, you need someone who can shrink down and have different perspectives, or grow really big, get that kind of bird's eye view. Everyone lends something. And when Prentice used that example, I was like, because I felt more at ease, because I was excited about the idea of a writer's room, participating in one. But I was like, I initially came from film, like movies, or it might be 2 writers on a movie every blue moon, but it's mostly, as you know, solitary. But that can also be really sexy, because it's like, ooh, like, you know, I don't have to share this award for anyone when I get it, right? You don't have to share the, you know, but print, it's mine, my own, my precious, right? And so, but Prentice really, with that Avengers example, made that also sexy, because he was like, maybe you're Hulk, maybe you're Black Widow, but today, while we're trying to break this story, we need you to bring your gift. You know, at least just throw out an idea. If we don't take it, it's okay, but you arrived to work today physically and mentally. You were on fire, you were ready to go, you had ideas. It's okay if we don't take it today, we might take it after lunch break. We might take it, what, maybe today's Monday? Not your idea today, but maybe Friday, your idea is right on point or something. And it was just that team dynamic. He made it so attractive, like you fit like Tetris pieces right where you belong. We're all playing God together, and it all, everybody gets blessed. Everything gets worked out. This becomes everyone's favorite show, because everyone brought their piece to it.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's your favorite part of writing?
Favorite part of writing, like when you finish breaking the story, that feels really good. Like when you've made all the puzzle pieces locked together, you've decided, okay, this is where she starts, this is where she ends, here's how we're gonna get there, here's how I'm gonna layer different characters, you know, epiphanies into one scene so we can get as much done. I like when it has all fit together and you just have a masterpiece.
Yes. Yes. But do you, what's your process like? Do you have one, or does it change when you're coming at a new script?
Okay. So for me, since no one is like waiting on me for anything, I have a list of ideas in my phone and on my mirror. I like write down if I have a kernel of an idea.
Nice. And
I'll just, you know, write down all I know about it and where I think it's headed. And I'll identify where I'm stuck and I'll just leave it. I'll like just go live and notice different things like, oh, that's what I'm missing. And then I can come back to it. And if I come back to it and now everything flows, I'm like, okay, we're ready. That's how it was with my pilot Muse. I had sat with it for a long, long time. And I think I was stuck on how to start it. and how to continue it. The log line for it is that a 20-year-old girl, in an effort to avoid going home for the summer and coming face to face with her childhood traumas, she accidentally finds herself climbing the ranks of celebrity girlfriendom, which forces her to reevaluate her stance as a bad feminist. She's really confident in the fact that she's, I feel like that's like the perfect training ground for that.
Okay.
To see what are you really about and what do you really think this is about, you know?
Okay.
So, and I'm like free to talk about it because I copyrighted it. So, I kind of sat with that for a while and I didn't know why she was doing a lot of the things that she was. And it took me journaling and going back into like my own past and my own, my own thoughts about not only like how the world looks at feminism, but also how the world looks at traditional women, how good women have treated me, and how, like, it's air quotes around like good women, because sometimes the thought that you're a good woman creates like toxicity and like a little narcissism and stuff like that. So yeah. So just going over that and realizing where she's coming from and where she needs to go to become a more honest version of the woman she hopes to become, that broke it for me. And then I was able to write.
Wow. That's cool. Does memory, if I'm going with you, does memory trigger a lot of story ideas for you? Or I'm trying to find a cool way to ask, so where do you get your ideas from?
I think because we're all like carrying our personal histories always. So if you see something, you remember something, and I'm like, okay, that's a theme. And I want to explore this theme. Or like, that's a cool idea. I want to explore this idea. Or even just like a phrase, turning some words around and then being like, how can I work with this? Like I wrote on my mirror because I saw a story about this woman who was trying to get her mother's body. You know, like her mother had passed and it was an issue with her getting that body. Mm. But then I also thought of myself and how like, and other women, how like when they realize they're becoming like their mothers, they feel away. And like, it starts with like the way your body is changing. You're like, this looks like my mom. This looks like my mom. So then the phrase, I have my mother's, or like, I have my mother's body.
Mm, okay.
How it can be, how for that woman, it's an exciting thing, but for some women it's not. And then that's another thing that I'm excited to push and see what that becomes. So just kernels of ideas everywhere. And then when one feels like it's ready, like it's fully baked, that's when I write.
Nice. Can you speak to maybe like one area that's been challenging for you as a writer?
Writing.
She preaching, y'all.
Actual writing. The planning is great, but getting those characters in the room and talking is so hard because you're also sometimes overthinking. Is this the perfect direction to go in? Is this exactly what needs to happen? But what I'm trying to do lately is to free myself to write a bad draft and like, okay, let me write something.
Yeah.
Because when you read other people's stuff, it's a lot easier to be like, well, this is where it should have gone. This is where I would have gone. But you got to get yourself into that bad draft so that when you go back to it as a new person, having probably new experiences, you can be like, oh, well, I see what you were trying to do, but here's where you should have gone and tweak it like that.
Nice. Is there a piece of advice maybe? And if not, that's cool too, that you've seen either someone gave it to you, could have been in school prior to school or online at all, that you're like, that really helps me with my process. Me pretending to be you.
The write it bad. I think somebody said that, okay. Because the first draft is never the final draft.
No.
So, and also, if you look at shows on TV, they're not all good. And someone still got paid to write it. So.
Just stating a fact, guys. No shade here. It's just a fact.
The ones that I don't like, but there are shows that are not good.
Speak on it.
That are cliche. There are lines that we've heard again and again, but those people still get paid. So if I can write my bad script and have time to fix it and make it become better, then later on when I'm in writer's rooms, I'll already know the cliches that I tend to go to. I'll already be able to pick up on them early, and my first drafts will only get better, but you got to get the first bad one out. I wrote like a whole series. Well, half a series. I planned out a whole series, but I wrote half of it in like high school, early college.
Mm-hmm.
It is bad, but it has great moments in it. And that's kind of what you hold on to.
That's what you get. Yeah. Yeah. Because you got to learn from those little moments of brilliance and kind of, it's kind of like a 49er or something, like that old prospector looking for gold. Got to let those moments of brilliance like sit on the grate and let all just the whackness fall through without you thinking it's all, I mean, unless it's all whack, that's okay. Cause we gotta write whack drafts sometimes. But I mean, there's gotta be at least one kernel of gold in there. And you gotta keep, don't forget that. Cause I can sometimes forget my own moments of brilliance and be like, no, it's all trash. I'm just the king of imposters. I don't even know why I bought new journals today. I don't know why I did this and that. I don't know why I'm even living, because it's nothing worth writing about. But it's like, no. My mind kind of goes, yeah.
Mine does too. I'm like, I'll be like, nobody wants to hear these ideas. Honestly, when Insecure came out, I had been waiting for it for 2 years.
Okay.
When the show came out, I was so excited to watch it. And then when the credits rolled, I was like, there's no room for me anymore. Like, she is the awkward Black girl and there is no room for me in Hollywood now. And it is over for me.
Let it's me done. Stay at
school. Yeah.
Don't even leave home.
Right. Go back. Return.
Yes.
But I had to like realize, okay, those are her stories.
Right.
And even watching her stuff, there's stuff that if it was my show, I would have done it differently. And so that means that there are different shows in me, even though I am awkward and Black. There mm-hmm. are other things to my character and to my thought process and to the things I'm interested in. So if I get more in tune with what I like and not what I think I can sell to the industry, then, you know, good will come of it, basically.
Why do you think it's so common for us as writers or filmmakers in general to do that comparison thing? Because that was so real when you said there, like, there's nothing I can contribute, and you're not the only one who's felt that, and you're not the only one who will. In your opinion, as you're working through it yourself, why do you think that's so common?
I think it's because Hollywood gives so few opportunities that if they give an opportunity to someone who it's like you're similar to but not the same as, then you feel like it's because I'm not it, you know. Mm-hmm. And the me that I thought was valuable, they already got over there with her. So I think it's that. But at there's streaming has just opened it wide up.
Say that, yeah.
So many different shows are on, experimental shows, even like one season of shows. So, you know, give myself a shot.
That's great. Cause someone's gonna need that. That mentality is like, am I using this right? A dime a dozen. It's so common. And it's like, no matter how far you get, that doubt comes in. So many other people also might be better connected, or they might even be more seasoned. I don't know if this ever bothered you. It used to bother me where I'd compare myself to the greats like Issa or Prentice or somebody. And then it took someone else saying, well, I mean, but they've been in the game longer. Like sometimes it's just that practical.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, no, they're, I don't know, older than you. Just it could be that they might have been born and bred in LA, for example. They might have worked in a maybe adjacent to Hollywood. Like I wasn't didn't Ava DuVernay work in PR or something like, is that right?
It was like PR or marketing or
Or
something.
marketing. So she was kind of adjacent to it as opposed to someone else who's just super green, super fresh. You know, so you got to have that grace on yourself as a writer or whatever other section, whatever part of the industry that you aspire to leave a stamp on, so that you don't like disqualify yourself. And it's like, you know, because we need you, you know, whoever you are. And if you don't, you know, take a shot on yourself, nobody else can take a shot on you as well. But you got to like continue to expose you, live life, expose yourself to other stories, you know, see what it is you like. That leaves me to one. I don't have that written here either, but it just occurred to me. Do you feel like you've discovered your voice as a writer yet? Or are you still developing it? Or when you got it, how did that feel?
I think I got it with this pilot.
With this one?
I'm super excited about it.
Okay.
But I feel like my voice as a writer, I like to write flawed women. I like to write really flawed people, but I'm specifically interested in women because there's always a way to be. And as a human, you're 90% of the time not going to be in that way, or you're going to be so wrong. So I think that's interesting looking at what's expected of women at different times, what we expect of ourselves, and then who we really are. Those are always in constant conflict. And I think I write a little raunchy, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with I was really uncomfortable when they were reading like a triple X scene in the at the meta read, and I was like giggling about it, but it was important for the story. So, and then it's like I'm right here and they're reading this, like they're judging me.
This girl a
But,
freak.
right, focus on the script, but. It was important. It was important for the story. And I'm interested in stories like that because I think there's a lot that goes into like intimacy. And so that's something I'm interested in. And then I've found myself going into horror a little bit. I have like two horror thrillers that I want to write. And I think I go into that because it's the highest stakes of these human themes and ideas. Like Get Out, the idea of like, we're not talking about racism as I see you as less than. We're talking about the opposite of it, which I experienced a lot in high school. Like my dad was like, I know you deal with racism. And I'm like, no, they like me too much. And that is also a problem. Say something really basic in class, and they think it's the most brilliant thing in the world. It's like, do you really? Or like, are you just impressed to see me talk? Like, I don't know. I don't know. And that's what Get Out was about. It's about we like you so much, we're gonna inhabit your body. And I thought that was really a really interesting thing to do. And then I wanted to go back and talk about when you were talking about the time it takes.
Please.
About that too, in order to give myself grace, because I think it took him like 7 years to write Get Out.
I think I heard that too.
So when my movie isn't done in 2 years, that's fine. It's gonna have to be fine.
But for real though, like it is a process. Like I heard, like I think it took Chris Nolan 10 years to write Inception, and it like went through different stages. I think it was, speaking of horror, I think it started off as like a horror feature film script and then turned into, you know, the sort of low, the sci-fi heist that it is. But I think at the time he wasn't even married. He didn't have children at the time, or one of those, I think, and that later added to the story. So you're right, it takes living life and maybe working on other projects as well. Whether you're established or not, you have to keep writing. And it's just gonna have to be okay.
Right, it's just gonna have to be okay.
Would you like to say anything more about the importance as a writer storyteller to living life? because it's easy to put yourself on lockdown and just overthink stories. You mentioned that earlier. I've struggled with that myself. How important is living life in your experience as a creative?
I think it's like absolutely important. And Princess Penny also talks about it, because if you're in a room and you're trying to work on something and you're stuck, it's because something in your mind hasn't clicked. Either it's not there or you haven't been reminded of it. So I think you have to go out and live life to either remember the thing that you already know that you need for to break that story, or to see it play out. Because if you're writing imitates life, it's heightened, but it imitates life. So whatever you're stuck on, you're going to encounter it eventually, and you can bring that back. So you have to go out, because if you just stay in the room, all you'll have is all you have, you know?
Yeah. Yes. That's great, because something that's been helping me, I said it earlier, was just like, you got to write you what you said about the bad draft. Like, you got to get, because the bad draft is in there. Drafts, if we're being fair, it's not just the one. I don't let nobody say, oh, they just said one draft. Yo, I'm off to the right. No, it's going to be multiple drafts, but you have to do the writing. You can't, you know, sit there like Dr. Xavier from the X-Men and kind of think it out. You can't. It's some of that, and it's talking to your friends, and it's going for a walk, and it's going on vacation, and it's getting those drafts out, typos and everything. But you got to experience, just as you have to experience life, you have to experience the writing itself.
Experience the ideas that come out first, and then you can judge them and tweak them from there. But yeah, you have to experience the script that is natural to you before you can make it better.
I like how you said that. You do. You got to give it its chance. For those who don't know, can you briefly define the script pilot?
Okay. So the pilot is the first episode of a series, of a season. Well, of a series, really. Mm-hmm. And that pilot introduces you to the character. It introduces you to the world, and it sets you on the journey of whatever the rest of the season is about to be. Oh yeah.
There you go. Are you a fan of story Bibles yourself? I know they're necessary, but I was curious as to how you might feel about
it. I've never done one because it seems like too much.
I can see that. Sure.
I think maybe for like one of the thrillers that I have coming up, because it involves like a full society. Like, I'm going to understand that society, and I might write like a document for them and their history and how they like came about, so that I can drop little details. Cause I know that was what was done for Get Out.
Okay.
Clearly not my muse, so.
Yes.
I might do that, but I think what I'll do more of is understanding like the wants and needs of a character, and then the past things that got them there. When I was in high school, I took a psychology class and I learned the word schema, and I kind of haven't really know. Schema is like any situation that you've locked into your brain, and it has informed how you view the world.
Okay.
So like when you get bit by a dog when you're young, you're never really going to be comfortable around dogs. Because you just know what they're capable of, you know? So I'll figure out a character's wants and needs. I'll figure out where they're going and make the situation a foil for those wants and needs. And then I'll figure out what schema, what past stories and, you know, situations have made them so sure that what they believe about the world is true. And that's about as far as I'll go. And I'll do that for all the characters so that I know that it's in conflict with each other. Okay. And they're gonna rub up against each other. Because Toni Morrison does that.
Nice. Can you speak to your experience? I read that you're self-taught. Can you speak to like how what that journey was like, including but not limited to when you knew you were a writer?
Okay, so it started at 15, where I was doing a lot of research. I was watching a lot of like TED Talks with Pete Doctor
Pete
of
Doctor, I'm not
Pixar.
familiar with. Oh, yeah, okay.
And he is incredible. I'm such a fan. So I was looking at his TED Talks. I was looking at lessons from the screenplay, which will tell you about story.
I
Yeah.
love Michael Tucker and those guys. I love them.
Yeah, no, I was eating those up. And then I forget what the other one was that would actually show you script format and dialogue and save the cat type things. Yeah, so I was doing that. And then in college, Kelsey Scott, who was actually on Insecure as one of the office friends, she's
Nice,
an
okay.
actor, but she also reviews people's scripts, or that's what she was doing at the time. And so she came to FAMU and she did a class, and I thought it was just going to be a couple hours and I'd missed like one class. But then she was like, okay, we're going to go to break. And then after lunch, come back and we'll do the rest of the day. I was like, oh, so I'm not going to class today.
Nope.
I didn't go to any of my classes that day. I just sat in there and I learned how to write a script from her. And I got to ask questions, which is important to me, being able to like interact and ask direct questions. And that gave me a lot of confidence to continue writing my own script. And then since then, I'll hear different words and I'll look them up. Lately, I've discovered the Paley Center's like interviews with the office staff, like the writer's room of the office. And so I'll listen to what their writer's room was like and how certain pitches became full episodes and how they became small details. Mindy Kaling is like dark. You wouldn't know it, but like the pitches that she mentions are like dark. So that's funny and
The mind of a
interesting.
comedian.
It's always dark in there. And so just looking at other writers' rooms, finding different iterations of scripts and like reading the scripts that I'm really interested in. I have the Fleabag scripts in there. I have scripts that I've taken off of sets. Like, but just reading as many scripts as you can, seeing how you keep pace and tempo and intrigue, and maybe this isn't like a story, or how you feed different drama points in the middle of a joke.
Okay.
That's interesting. Just looking
That
at interesting
balance.
ways,
Okay.
yeah, how people tell stories and how they give the audience information and where they expect the audience to figure it themselves. You know, that balance between the writer and the audience is really interesting. So,
That's cool. And we're so lucky now. There are so many resources. One of my favorites is like scriptslug.org or .com, I think, where you can just go find all these scripts and they like regularly update it and things like that. Like you mentioned Get Out, that's where I got the Get Out script in Atlanta and a few other things. And it's just like, gosh, this stuff is free. 'Cause like you'll listen to the greats now. Like Jordan Peele didn't have any of this, or Steven Spielberg or Ava. None. I'm like, how the heck did they? I'm such a millennial. How did they make it?
maybe it was Quentin Tarantino, or maybe it was someone who had gotten a Quentin Tarantino script and they like broke it was the only script they had seen and they broke it down so far
Okay.
because they were so interested by it. I can't remember who said that, but I just recently saw that. And then also reading like the Blacklist scripts,
Okay, yeah.
things that haven't even been made yet, because like Queen and Slim was on there, King Richard was on there, but then there's also some stuff on there that hasn't been picked up or financed that might just stay amazing scripts. And also seeing what people think of the different scripts. Like, I think the one that won in maybe 2020 was called Headhunter.
Okay.
Really, really cool. But people were calling it like a ripoff of American Psycho.
Really? Interesting.
They were calling it that. And I could see where they thought that, but it didn't matter because it was good. it was really, really good. And it was interesting. And you're trying to figure things out. So you kind of have to turn the page for like, character would shock you with something crazy. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you're figuring out his ideology at the same time you're trying to figure out what is he actually doing right now. And that kept you engaged to the very last page.
Wow. That's cool. Guys, there are a lot of resources out there. It's a great time to be honing your craft. There's so many resources online and programs and things coming out and whatnot. In the Cut LA, you know, The Blacklist, Script Slug, etc. is just, whew, what a time, as our friend Jazz would say. Want longer episodes before everyone else? Excited for exclusive VIP content? Or maybe you'd just like to support the show? You're in luck. Josiah's voice on Black Filmmaking is now on Patreon. Become a member today at patreon.com/Josiah's Voice. This episode of Josiah's Voice podcast is brought to you by Newsly. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural, smooth human voice. It won't be my voice, but no app is perfect, but this one's pretty close. Because for the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. Browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. You can follow any topic as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin, or pop culture and movies. It will find you the latest articles and read them to you aloud. And they have podcasts as well, exploring trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Like this one. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me. That's www.newsly.me. Or from the link in the description. And use my promo code, Josiah Voice, Josiah Voice. I'll put that in the description for you. When you click it, you'll receive a 1 month free premium subscription to Newsly. Stop scrolling, start listening with Newsly. Let's pivot maybe a little briefly from writing for just a second, just a few minutes really, to talk about set life. Highlights along your journey and whatnot. You've been a production assistant in the past. Any lessons or gems or highs or lows, secrets that you'd share about production assistant life in your experience?
I think the coolest thing to me to this day is the proximity to people who are so talented, but then also so cool, like so chill. And obviously you can't just like talk to them and interrupt what's going on.
But sure.
Like I've definitely been on set of a Black Lady sketch show, and this show is out now. So the final episode of the most recent season, there is a sketch that doesn't have any of the women in it. It's just Taj Mahri and I forget the other actor's name, but they're playing a Scrabble game. They're playing a Scrabble game and the N-word comes up. Funny sketch. But none of the women were in it, which I don't think they've done before. Wow. And so Robin's watching the monitors, Robin Thede, and I ask her like, hey, this is really cool. I like this part, as if she cares what I think. And then I say, why did you decide not to put any of the ladies in the sketch? And she's like, oh yeah, just trying something new, trying something different. And that was kind of the end of that. And just realizing whatever goes on TV is just because someone was like, I thought it was cool. And so when I think something's cool, I can put that on the TV.
Yes.
And all these people just saw something, thought it was cool. You know, I'd do that. And then they do it. So it kind of demystified the process and the people behind the process.
That's cool. Okay. And it kind of, yeah, it makes things a little bit more casual, makes them more human as creators, I imagine, because it's just, I just thought that was cool. Or I just thought that maybe we should try this lighting setup, or maybe we should take this many cast out, put this many cast in, or we should, you know, that's, and that's cool that you got to have that brief exchange with her as well to kind of reinforce that. It's just you were curious about, or she was curious about it. So any curiosities you have about anything you wrote, about whatever team you assemble, however you want to go at it, you have permission to do it. Like, we really do.
And it's really like a place where you can be yourself. You can, like, the deeper you go into what you like, what you're interested in, what makes you laugh, and then you put it on screen, you find out other people are interested in it. It makes other people laugh, and it's different than what's on TV, because you can tell the shows that are made for what they think people want to see. And then you can tell the shows that are made because this is what I wanted to see, and y'all can watch it. I made a good thing.
Right. That's great. No, yeah, because it's reminded me, I don't know if I've shared this before. I was catching up with a friend on WhatsApp yesterday, and we were talking about like PA life, and he was asking me about my experience on Insecure, and something was going on writer Twitter, and it was happening at the same time as one time Amy Aniobi was directing an episode, right? Big fan of hers, really enjoy her work and watching her trajectory. Shout out to the Antidote podcast. That's a lot of fun. If people haven't listened to that, they did not ask me to do that. I just thought that it was cool and that she's cool and her team. But she was directing, and there was a brief like break for the riggers were going to do something. They were going to switch, you know, lenses or something like that. And I don't know why I did this, because I know to fall back as a production assistant, don't talk to nobody, just because the riggers or whoever need to do something, that just frees up the director or the AD or whoever to deal with something else in those brief 5 minutes. But somehow I asked her something about, I think on writer Twitter they were talking about exposition or something related to what's her name's show? Kate Winslet's show on HBO Max. I'm drawing a blank right now, but she's a detective. But they were talking about how, I guess the pilot was circling, the pilot script, I guess, was circling, or two versions of it, apparently. One version, if I remember right, had a lot of exposition on the first few pages about Kate Winslet's character. And then the other one, of course, didn't. And people were just talking about, like, why would you put all that in there? It's just, you know, it's just block, maybe not blocks, but plenty of white space. But it was just all this information about this character that I guess technically wasn't filmable or something like that. And you know, that so that kind of divided some people, you know, with some of the rules to how to be economical and things like that. And I, for some reason, felt to bring it up to Amy. I don't know why. And she seemed really fascinated by it. She was like, oh, that is interesting. You know, it's maybe if you're more seasoned, because that came up in some of the Twitter responses. Perhaps if you're more seasoned and you've proven you could do it, maybe that writer's room, whoever took lead on it or whatever, proved that they could do it. She was like, and then she had a moment of humility, which was, it made us both laugh. She was like, I wouldn't do it because I don't think I'm that great. And then, of course, here am I in my mind, like, listen to her talking about she's not that great. Yeah, okay. You're Amy Annie. What are you talking about? But it was cool to, like, you know, in that moment, she's like still kind of reflecting that, you know, I still have a lot to learn. So that's interesting you bring up this story about how much, when is it right to put this amount of exposition? How filmable is it? And it was just a really cool on-set exchange. That's why it came to mind, of just knowing when to talk to people, such like you did when you took that moment to just kind of express, you know, why did Robin, why'd you do that on Black Lady Sketch Show? And in a sense, I guess I was indirectly asking Amy, would you put that amount of exposition in? Is that a best practice or not? And it's just different for everyone else. So it does demystify as a production assistant, you know, when you're doing your job, guys, it does create opportunities to have interesting conversations with people.
Especially if you're talking about what they like, I'll when I agreed to do Tierra's short film, I was talking to the GP at the time, Kevin Atkinson, and I was asking him, like, okay, why do you use this filter for this? How do you believe in color filters? Like, or is that something that can really be done in post? Like, what are your thoughts on it? He would give me his thoughts, and I'm like, okay, cool, because I'm about to DP a short film and like and go into that.
Right.
It's different than pitching yourself, which is what a lot of people tell PAs not to do. Don't go up and say, like, hey, I'm a writer. I think this no.
Don't go do in, it.
I thought that was cool in the script, how this, this, and this. Because I've been trying to do something similar and I saw how you did it. I thought it was great. That's all it could be. That it could just be that. And now she knows you're a writer. She knows you actually look at scripts. She knows that you know something about format. Or if you say, like, oh, it reminded me of this, this, and this, she knows that you pay attention to other scripts. Like, you're getting a lot of information out of that interaction that builds you up as a person and doesn't make you just look like, oh, this person's coming to get something out of me and I feel like they might not know anything, which now there's a lot of heavy lifting for me to like give you whatever I don't know you think you want from me, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're just excited to talk about scripts with someone else who is also excited to talk about scripts, that's an actual moment of connection and that goes a lot further.
Yeah, or in your case, casting, how they structured the characters, new characters versus, you know, the ensemble cast of women and things like that, you know, from a director's standpoint, just finding those lines of commonality, it just makes for great experiences on set as a PA or otherwise.
Yeah, if you just lean into what you're actually interested in.
Exactly. Anything you'd also like to demystify about people starting out as production assistants, because that's entry level and that can be mad tough. It can be really, really hard. Anything you'd like to demystify or any advice based on your own experience for others?
Straight up regular advice, get a bag, a small bag, so that you don't have to carry like a purse or anything. In that bag needs to be pens for sure. Scissors would be cool. A phone charger. Someone's always going to need it. A lighter.
A lighter. Yeah.
Yeah. A lighter. When I was in Atlanta, I was buying a lot of cigarettes for people and they always needed a lighter. So I was always the one with the lighter and then lotion too.
You better speak on it.
Any little way that someone could be like, man, I really need something. And you got it. That just like makes you better, you know?
Yes.
And then just always being ready and willing, being interested in things, find ways to make yourself interested in what's going on and use that opportunity to make connections. People should know what you're trying to do without you acting like what you're doing now isn't valuable.
Okay.
Yeah. And then additionally, like COVID PA, that is the plug right now.
Get on it.
You don't need experience. Even with like PAs, they want to know, like, do you know walkie etiquette? Do you know set etiquette? Do you know all these different things? With PA, they do not ask you that. And now it's like double the PAs on set. You're just around so much that you gotta take that opportunity to spark conversations, small conversations, convenient conversations with people.
Yeah.
Cause that's how I was a COVID PA. I had to be in the room. I asked the first AC, her name was Shelly. I asked her what her rings did and she was excited to tell me. And then later I said, can I just shadow you? And she was like, totally. Cause I had to be in the room anyways. So now I'm shadowing her. I'm asking her questions. And that's when she's like, I see you work hard. I see you're interested. You know, we have to hire a camera PA through this program. Please apply and I will hire you, like guaranteed. So using those opportunities in the room and always being helpful and always being interested, I think. Does that answer the question?
I know that no, that does, because it's, you know, you're in, I heard you say it, like anticipating people's needs, small conversations, you know, because you got to be open to, like, you know, you mentioned walkies, there's always a lot of chatter, you want to be available for what's going on, but you also don't want to be, depending on what's going on, shut off from, you know, your team or whatever. There is time to talk to people. Can you also speak to what was your experience like when you got to LA and or on your first, like, professional set? Were you recommended? Was your resume just fire? Did it not matter? How, in your experience, how do you get on set into that job?
I got on set because through FAMU Focus, I had met Stevie Ray Warren.
Friend of the podcast as well.
Like, if you see a Black person on set, like, there's a 50-65% chance they know Stevie Ray Warren. And so
nice.
Before I moved out, I asked her, like, is there anybody would be good for me to know? And she gave me some people. And one of them was like, there are no Black people on our set, so I would like to hire a Black person. I know they're looking for COVID PAs. Are you interested? Had my resume ready. Put your resume on your desktop so that you can get to it on your phone, you know?
Yes.
So, like, your desktop, my desktop is connected to the cloud. I keep my resume there so that wherever I'm at, I can get my most updated resume out immediately. Because that's another thing. Like, if they call you and you say, I need to send my resume, and then they call someone right after you, and that person sends their resume immediately, they're getting the job and you're not. Just that quick.
Copy you. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that. And then that lady got me onto Shrink Next Door for Apple TV.
Okay.
And then I was in the room. You just got to be in the room. Awesome.
Where it happened.
You got to be in the room where it happened.
Thank you for that setup, that little layup right there. That's no, that's great. And I thought of something else funny, especially for you COVID PAs of color. Yes, mm-hmm. To the lotion, because the cleanliness, because you are washing your hands more than you ever had. And my hands was cracking, and I had my little fanny pack or my back, whatever. And I had a little travel size thing of cocoa butter, and I became the plug.
Exactly. Everybody loves you.
Everyone was like, yo, bro, can you hit me with something? You know, or just it's just because, yeah, the cleanliness and just that you're washing hands, you're giving people hand sanitizer like every 5 minutes, so on and so forth. And also that battery pack or power pack for your phone. I got one as well. I became the plug there too. And some of y'all are going to listen to this episode. I ain't going to say no names, but it was too funny in the group chat because I sent a link for that power pack and no one took me up on it. And I mean, it, you know, life is also hard in LA. We are production assistants. So I made it work, but it became a funny thing because I was like, I sent these jokers the link and everyone's just like, hey, Josiah, you done with the power pack yet? And I was like, yeah, you know, so it became a little endearing afterward. But yes, you will need that because your phone's going to die, especially if you're like on location in LA, like, you know, your phone brightness or whatever is just going to get drained. You're on the phone. So yeah, those are some lotion and power pack for your phone. Yeah, I can definitely attest. Battery. Say the last part again.
Extra walkie battery. If you're
your a walkie set. Battery.
Probably hand sanitizer if you're a COVID PA.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, my COVID PA job, we were watching the construction. So while they were building sets, moving sets, all that stuff, we were just watching them. And I got a lot of writing done there. Because, like, everyone on the COVID team mm-hmm. was writers. So
oh, no we way. Were writing,
reading each other's stuff.
That's fire.
Make the most of your time.
Nice. Yes. Okay, that's great. So there's a little bit of gems for you guys trying to get in. COVID PA is not going to last forever, but it's like standard production assistant is already entry level, but it is difficult to get into that. So then the blessing in disguise that came with lockdown and everything was then the COVID PA was invented. So it's like entry level, you know what I'm saying? So it's like that's a great way to get in, and I'm grateful for those opportunities that I got through that big time. Let's switch to producer life. Your experience so far with Sounds of War, and then of course you have Perspective coming up. What are some highlights and lessons from being a producer, and maybe even any challenges you had to face?
Okay, so producer life. First of all, I don't really fancy myself a producer. I just knew it needed to get done and I
Okay.
wanted to be helpful. And so I was like, I know I can put together like some spreadsheets. I know I'm a good communicator, a clear communicator. I know I can get information out quickly and concisely, thoroughly. What I didn't know was like how much planning has to happen
Yeah.
so quickly. How, you know, it was the middle of COVID, so we had to get a nurse. And I think our nurse dropped out either the day before or like
Oh
2 days
no.
before we
Okay.
were gonna shoot. And I was like up late on the phone calling anyone I could, like, hey, Fran, I know you have this certificate. Can you do this class real quick and come help? No? Okay. Your mama won't let you go. Okay. Like, okay, I know this nurse. Like, I'm reaching out all these different ways and hitting all these dead ends. And I was talking to, which I should have just figured it out, but we were kind of close with the Beats team. It was a very small team. And I was like, hey, like, no one's, what am I supposed to do? No one's responding. I'm trying. And they were like, it has to get done. So keep doing it. And
Wow.
I was like crying. I'm like, please, somebody.
Oh
But,
man.
you know, it finally got done. So that was really tough for me,
Yeah.
the management of people and the logistics of things. Was tough. I also had never been on an actual set
At that
before
time, okay.
I did that. So there was a time where people were like, is it time for lunch? And I was like, oh yeah, we'll get lunch. But then I was also doing so much other stuff. And after a while, I was like, they're getting kind of angry. Like, we're making a
Uh-oh.
movie, guys. Like, right. I'm like,
Y'all don't need to eat.
the food's relaxed. But no, they expected a certain thing. And I didn't know. So that was something that I learned. And being able to give myself grace to apologize and not act like I know it all, not get defensive and be like, well, we had snacks and y'all should have da 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 and you'd be okay. And da, da, da. No, I was wrong. I didn't know. I'm sorry. Here's lunch. Let's take a full break. Like things like that. There was a lot of learning curves with that project. But at the end of the day, when you have a really small team and a small budget, things just have to get done. So you gotta suck it up and do it.
Wow. And it was also, was it weird handling someone else's script since you're a writer yourself? You have your own projects. Did that affect anything, or you were just like, nope, it's fine. I got it.
No, it didn't affect anything because I was. That was another moment where I had to be like, this is her story. This is not my story. Because we worked on things collaboratively, but this was not one of them. The script was entirely hers. And so I was like, it's her vision. She tells me what she needs, and I do it. And it can't be ego about it. If there's issues, I can talk about it, but as a producer, it's my job to figure it out. And it's another service role where you're in service to another person and in service to the project. So just, you know, putting your own feelings on the back burner, being able to stay level-headed and get the job done.
Nice. So that would in for you, would you say that's if you want to be a good producer, you need to have some of that, or really just
Yes.
all of that for real. Anything else you're like, guys, if you want to, because you're like, I'm not fancying myself a producer, but if you want to be a producer, You got to be in service to the project. You got to be,
in service to the project. You have to be able to pivot and problem solve on like a dime.
And you like the medic.
Exactly. You can't be calling the medic like, why can't you come? And calling the produce or the beats team like, well, do we really have to have one? No, it's just that's done. Here's what's next. I have to figure out what's next. And then clear communication, clear and early communication, no last minute, give people time to plan stuff out. And then what else was interesting about that project, which I'm kind of going away from the question. I answered the question, so I'm going away from it, is that since it was such a small team, Jazz was the director, but she was also in front of the camera. And so sometimes she had to step away to change, or if she was in front of the camera and things were moving, I had to watch and be like, I think it moved like this, or a little faster, a little slower. There were some shots in there that, like, I got set up. And that's really where that first little camera bug bit me.
Okay.
Because there's a shot in the film where she's walking along the aisles and the camera is trucking right next to her.
Yes, I remember that shot.
I picked that shot.
That's you. That's Simone, y'all. That shot was fire.
We said, how should this go? And I'm like, I think it should move right along. And they're like, okay, so we should get the track. And I was like, okay. Like, I didn't know what that was.
Gotcha.
And then after I had heard them kind of talk, then we moved over here and they're like, how should we line up this shot? I'm like, off center, you know, lower in the frame. And this is the establishing shot, kind of like how the last one was the establishing shot. And the camera guy stopped and he was like, that was a really good way to explain that. I'm like, I'm a DP, you know?
Remember me. Yeah.
So that was another really exciting thing about the project, is I was a producer in such a loose way that it was just the big boss helper, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love it. Guys, you got to check out, I'm going to link it and everything. You got to check out Sounds of War, Simone and Jazz's film. You guys did a lot in just, it's under 10 minutes, but there's so much story, so much happening, so much to think about in that film. Inspired me a lot with my writing and how I'd like to approach my next projects and things like that. I was just like, this is how it's done. That's how I felt. This is how it's done.
Incredible. She's like a true creative. I was looking to see if her painting was over here, but like, she's a true creative in so many different mediums and like such a brilliant storyteller. And it was just great to be able to help on that and to make sure I understood her vision enough to be helpful and not be an obstacle to what she was trying to do.
That's awesome. Simone, this has been great. Is there any advice that you'd give to your fellow Black filmmakers just about the creative process, whether they're trying to get to LA, maybe you're looking for your tribe, just based off of your experience so far?
Talk to the other Black people on set, because we're so happy to see you.
We really are, guys. We really are.
Hi, they'll be like, oh my God, hi. Like. So talk to the other Black people on set. Put yourself out there, whether that is finding places like the Metaphor Club who have table reads, going to those events, going to competitions, going to comedy shows, like put yourself out there, go outside and you will find people and be confident and sure of what you're interested in, and that's how you'll find people who are interested in similar things. And then as far as the filmmaking of it, again, like, refer to yourself, make things for yourself, make the thing that excites you the most. Doesn't really matter, you know, who's gonna buy it or who's gonna like it, because someone always will like it. I don't know about buy it, but someone always
you're right.
Make things that you like. and ask people if they can help you and just keep going forward. Like, there's a lot of rejection involved in this industry, but there are things that are rejected like 9 million times and then get one yes and you're off. So just keep the faith. If you believe in it, someone will eventually. So just keep going with it. Don't lose the faith.
Yeah. I forgot who wrote it, but I'm hearing that song, "Keep Your Head to the Sky." But it's true. Yeah. Because I was going to say, yeah, there's a lot of rejection or if not rejection, because I was only in LA for about 3 years. And then things didn't really take off until about my final year and a half, where I was booking like more shows, getting more experience. So there's also the waiting game. If it's not rejection, then you're also waiting. And I remember you mentioned that earlier, even being union and things like that. Sometimes there's a lot of patience, whether you black or otherwise, that you do have to, you got to exercise, but sometimes maybe even as a black filmmaker as well, because the pool is still, is moving like molasses, but it's growing, you know, it is. And I think those are great gems that you share just then, tell people.
And then also, this industry is based off of friendships, you know, and relationships. So sometimes the waiting feels like rejection, because yeah, you know, you're waiting because they chose somebody else, but they only chose that person because they know them more than you.
Right.
You know, so just taking that for what it is. Like, I've only been here almost a year and a half. So okay, my network is still relatively small. My understanding of being a digital utility, I just got solid in it.
Okay.
And so just understanding where you are in the process, understanding that, you know, rejection happens, but the yeses are right around the corner, and keeping yourself in the game in whatever way that is. Sometimes it's just being in the room. So like being a COVID PA was just me being in the room. Me being a digital utility, this is because I'm like, I don't really know how to like get in as a writer, but I know that like as a utility, I'm in the room, and you know, maybe I have a little extra something on my name, and yeah, I can be right up close with the camera. So just whatever way you can stay in the game, just try to stay in the game, and that it's that in itself is progress.
I love that. That's great. In fact, to the digital utility part, what do you love most about that aspect of the visual aspect, the camera aspect of it? What do you love about the visuals?
I like, the more I learned about it, the more I realized how important it is to story.
Okay.
Like noticing, I was watching 14 Cameras yesterday, which is like a Netflix, it was on Netflix, horror movie about this guy who puts cameras in Airbnbs. He's a creep.
Bruh. But
the camera is handheld, and even though he's not there, and even if you don't notice it, like it makes you feel like somebody's watching.
Yeah,
there are so many different choices. Like handheld means like somebody's watching, somebody's moving, the camera becomes a person. Like you can do reveals with the camera, you can place people higher or lower in frame to like display power dynamics. You can use a super wide to make people feel far apart, or like if you play with how they're reaching towards the screen and that distortion, you can imply like some psychosis, you know. You can do Dutch angles that make you uneasy because, you know, the horizon isn't level. And all of these things are things you don't notice, but are very important to the story. And if you start to notice them, sometimes there's even foreshadowing in it. So that has been really interesting, realizing how important every department is, mm-hmm, to the, how detailed they are, because it's like, this is my one thing. And if there isn't anything else, we could just put these shots up and I'd understand the story, you know? Or like if there was no story and we just saw a snapshot of this person's room, I know who they are. That's for like set deck, you know? So yeah. Everybody has their own part to play in really telling the story, and that is beautiful.
I love that. Did you didn't by any chance see, there's a clip from this show, I think it's on HBO, called The Staircase. And it's like, it blew up on Twitter. I don't know if it's like circulating on IG, but it's like this crazy, it's some type of crane shot that like drops from the sky. This is happening at night and it's following like two or three cars and it's like floating over the top of the car and then it flips and it's like looking in through the windshield. Then it just kind of glides over the road and goes to the next car. And it, did you see that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Nah, but that sounds crazy. In my head,
is madness.
I'm thinking about like how many different people were probably involved in that. Like, because there's no way the crane's doing that. So there's handoffs happening in the middle of that. I'm just imagining all that
stuff. Or like drones. I will DM it to you after this because I saw it and I was like, what in God's name am I looking at? Like this, this is HBO being HBO. Okay, like what's going on? But
that was probably a movie who was like, I want to do this. And now the cinematographer has to really figure it out. Or maybe it came from the cinematographer first. And right. Everyone has to be on their A game at all times in order to make something that magical.
So. Yes. Or like that famous scene in Children of Men. I'm sure you've seen that a million times where they show like the long take in the car. And I guess they cut the roof off of the car and they're like doing all these weird things. Say again.
Did they go backwards then?
Oh, when they put the car in reverse? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one. With a Chiwetel Ejiofor, Clive Owen, Julianne Moore. Yeah, is that famous shot. Or what was the one I was just... Oh, man, I'm having a brain fart right now. I was like, I know she'd seen this or would love this show. Oh, it was... I don't know if you watched Mr. Robot, but they had... You need to watch that. The writing's madness, but the cinematography is also crazy. They made me fall in love with Headroom because they do crazy stuff with Headroom that you are not supposed to do. That you're like, there's all this look space behind people's heads. Sometimes it's almost like their chin is just sitting on the lower letterboxed and all types of just, but it fits the show and the theme of like conspiracy and they're watching you and freedom fighters and things. You got to check that stuff out.
Having a bunch of headroom, it makes you focus on the background.
Yeah.
And like where they're fitting in that space. So, you know, it's always different. Every shot means something.
It's not wasted. Did you see, I forgot who directed it. It Follows.
Mm-hmm.
Just already knew in movie because I actually don't like horror films. I do like thriller films though, but every now and again I'll catch a certain kind of horror film, and that one was a lot of fun for me with the headroom, and I was just always watching the corners. And I'm like, oh man, where is it gonna come from? It's gonna come from here. Why is this shot so wide? It's just nothing wasted. It's just God, it's amazing. I love it.
I think it's called The Neighbors. There's a shot in The Neighbors. I think it's called The Neighbors, where the neighbors were creeps. They were coming in the house, you know, trying to like kill people.
Mm-mm.
And there's a shot where the lady's just minding her business and the neighbor is standing looking at her and she doesn't know. And it's a wide enough shot. We're just watching him, watching her. And then he just walks away. And that was so scary.
Stress.
You could have died. Not to now it's like, okay, so he's playing, like it's a game for him. He wants,
yes,
okay,
let's change the subject as we bring it to a close. What's your favorite thing about cinema? Why do you love cinema so much? And where can people follow you online?
Okay, my favorite thing about cinema is going right back to character. I feel like when people sit in front of a screen, they fall in love with the character, and it allows them to hear new ideas and see different lifestyles that they hadn't before. Like, I think about when A Different World, it was going, people love it. And then they have the episode about AIDS, and they have the character that we had already
felt
in Act One, and then we found out they have AIDS. And people who demonize people with that disease are like, okay, I don't know, he's not a bad person. And then someone else like saying all the things that you wonder or you fear, and seeing those interactions, and it makes it impersonal so that you can receive it. And it also is a self-reflection when you're seeing different things playing out on screen, how they affect people, like the people you disagree with, and they come in contact with someone who disagrees with them, and then they go home, you see how that affects them, how they carry that. I think it's a good place for self-reflection and empathy. I just love it. And then where can they find me? I'm on Instagram at Simone_Alexandria. That's SIMONE, like Nina, _ALEZANDRIA. And you can find me right there. I respond to DMs.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I will link all that in the show notes for you. This has been a lot of fun. Last bonus question. In my research, I did see your Different World project, actually. That was fire. I was like, what brought that idea, and what was it like?
World, because we already know I love A Different World. It was an application to be part of the HBCU LA program. I did not get in, but it was cool because I was in my college dorm room. I put up a green screen on the wall. I recorded myself a million different times because I am the only character in this. So there's about 30 different Simones. I recorded it on my iPhone with a lamp set up. And then I put it in, I had a different kind of editor. I didn't have like an Adobe editor. It was like DaVinci or something. I put it in there and I figured out how to layer it and slow it down and speed it up. And I found a photo of a room and I changed the color and I made it drag along so that it looked like it was in lockstep with how I was moving, like as if there was a dolly. Yeah, I did so much with that.
She really did, y'all. It's her rendition of the A Different World opening credits, where it's just a long take following all the cast through different stages of being a student and costume changes. And she did the same thing by herself, solo, like she said, with 300 different Simones doing different things as she's describing why you should pick me.
In a room with my phone on a lamp, and that's how I did it. It was so crazy. This is like a Nardwar moment, because I'm like, how did you see that?
I don't know. I don't know if it's on your... I might have just Googled, because I don't think it's on your link tree or whatever you have or something. Or I might have put your name in YouTube, or because I'm like, my filmmaker friends, everyone's got a Vimeo or a YouTube, so I'm like, well, I wonder what'll come up or something like that. But I saw that, and I was like, that's tight.
I love that you saw that. I'm still really proud of it, even though it was so long ago, even though I didn't have a good camera, I didn't know nothing about frame rate, like, still really proud of it.
No, you should, because I thought it was super creative, and I was like, I wonder, did she have any help with it? Like, I wonder, because it's just her, who knows? And now to hear you say, like, nah, it's just me solo doing my application.
And that was back when I was scared to ask for help, so I was really just all my furniture to the side, hung up a giant green screen, and worked on it over a couple of days.
That was cool. I know you didn't get in, but look at where you are now. Who knows where you're going to be when this episode drops. You guys are really in for it. If you've listened this whole time, we both really want to say thank you. Again, let me repeat myself. Follow Simone. I hope you gleaned a lot of gems from her writing experience, PA experience, producer, the DIY thing, doing it yourself. There was just a wealth of experience in this episode, and I was really looking forward to this one. It exceeded all my expectations. Simone, thanks again for this was also a cool reunion because we haven't seen each other since the securing the bag with Homegirl Jazz. So this was cool to also just catch up anyway. And you, a lot of what you said, especially as a writer, really resonated. So I'm going to take that stuff home, listen to this back, and fill my journal with a lot of what you said to kind of tag those things up. So to all of you who listen, I hope you really enjoyed this. Simone, thank you. Guys, if you like this, there's more where this came from. Just subscribe. And until then, I'll talk to you on the next one. Peace. If you enjoyed that episode, I invite you to subscribe on your favorite listening app. To keep up with the show, you can follow me on Twitter at JosiahDOCX and on Instagram at Josiah's Voice Pod. And if you like my theme music, it's called Brewer Bee by Mateo. The link is in the description. Thanks again, and talk to you later.